was supposed to be. For reasons being, we up to now we don't form a quorum. But what we may do is to allow Honorable Dantley to present submission and brief us about the content, and would then possibly, if by the time she finished we don't correct, then it means we will defer the discussions and then call on other stakeholders to come and present in the next meeting. Over to you, Honorable Member. Thank you. And for that matter, thank you for coming. And we are expecting you to take us through and make us understand to the content of the document before us. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I thought perhaps it would be helpful just to go through what's in fact in the bill. You probably got the bill in front of you. Under a section where it speaks about the place where termination of pregnancy may take place, it is just an addition there. The amendment is an addition there where it says, has access to ultrasound equipment, which must be used accurately to determine the gestation period prior to TOP, and two, to provide relevant information as to the state of the development of the unborn child, thereby assisting the mother to make an informed choice. Give access to counselling which must comply with Regulation 7 of the regulations made under the Principal Act. Two, provides full opportunity for discussion and questions. Three, provides sufficient information including electronic pictures or diagrams and photographs to enable the woman or child to understand the development of the unborn child. Four, includes discussion of the extent of the risks involved in continuing the pregnancy as set against the risks involved in terminating the pregnancy, including breast cancer, depression, and future difficulties in conceiving and bearing children, and available alternatives to abortion, including adoption and state and other support available to the mother. So that would be what I'm suggesting that we include. But I'd like to speak specifically now to the ultrasound aspect and the informed consent. It is nowadays generally accepted best practice in medical circles that no routine emergency abdominal surgery is performed without a prior abdominal scan, usually an ultrasound. A termination of pregnancy is a surgical procedure that requires prior scanning. Not to offer this service to the patient prior to such an invasive procedure is tantamount to medical negligence, especially in the light of the fact that requests for termination of pregnancy are always elective and never medical emergencies. There thus always is sufficient time to perform an ultrasound before initiating the procedure. Allowing registered medical centers to perform these procedures without having an ultrasound machine on the premises is medico-legally indefensible. Reasons why ultrasound scanning prior to a termination of pregnancy is vital to the well-being of the patient. Firstly, determination of the gestational age. The CTOP Act, as it now stands, allows for a different handling of the pregnancy based on a cut-off date of 12 weeks and 20 weeks. It is clinically impossible to delineate gestational age with such precision, necessitating an ultrasound to verify the patient's history. It is also common practice in South Africa to prescribe misoprostol for the induction of labor as a means of procuring termination of pregnancy in cases of early pregnancy that's under 12 weeks. However, if the age of gestation has not been accurately determined, misoprostol administration can cause irreversible harm to the patient's cervix, which administered at a gestational age beyond 12 weeks. Should a qualified person engage in a termination of pregnancy based on false evidence supplied by the patient, this does not safeguard the caregiver or his or her employer from later legal or medico-legal steps. It is therefore in the best interests of caregivers and patients alike that the age of gestation be accurately verified. Excluding other findings, it is in no way unlikely that the patient coming for a termination of pregnancy is suffering from the same medical conditions that affect any other pregnant woman. These conditions include an ectopic pregnancy, molar hidatidosis, ovarian cysts, and leiomyomata. Should surgical evacuation of the womb be attempted in any of these cases, it has the potential of endangering the patient's life, which is medico-legally indefensible. prior ultrasound will prevent risking the patient's health and life in such a frivolous way. Then on the issue of informed consent, it is of grave concern that the current Act does not specify the type of informed consent that is required prior to a termination of pregnancy. Paragraph 5 of the Principal Act merely requires that the consent be informed without specifying what this means. It is common cause in medico-legal circles that for consent to be informed, it has to be truthful, as complete as possible, and understandable to the patient. It is also clear, after 13 years of implementation in South Africa, that these three aspects are routinely overlooked in the preparation for a termination of pregnancy. Research published during the past decade has mostly confirmed the link between termination of pregnancy and increased breast cancer risk in later life. Papers published in prominent journals have highlighted the dramatically elevated risk of later psychological and psychiatric damage, as well as a staggering 14-fold increase in risk of death due to unnatural causes due to risk-seeking behavior during the first year after a termination of pregnancy. The link between termination of pregnancy and later infertility due mainly to cervical incompetence also goes undisputed in scientific circles. Even though a risk is just that, an increased chance, not a foregone conclusion, at the very least, the well-being of the patient mandates that she be made aware in an appropriate fashion of these risks so that she is fully empowered to make an informed decision. Leaving the content of informed consent counseling up to the caregivers is clearly not sufficient. It therefore becomes necessary to outline in law the basic elements of what constitutes informed consent in the case of a request for termination of pregnancy. So I will leave it there, I think, you know, in the hopes that there would have been a discussion, but then just refer you to obviously the background that I've put under the section of memorandum on the objects and the objects of the bill. So speaking there to the genuine informed consent, modern medical science has taken enormous strides forward since the Act came into being, so there are other factors scientifically at play. The issues around availability of ultrasound, and I think one of the big reasons, of course, we know how seriously legal challenges affect the budgets of Parliament, and not just that, but also how much public funding gets wasted through departments being sued for things, and there is just very serious, we're put up, my argument would be that we are placing departments in a very seriously insecure position in terms of where that consent is clearly not informed to the degree that it should be, and so the legal challenges could completely, like what happened in a sense with the tobacco industries. You go along for many years where everybody just accepts, well, these are the evils that attend, and then all of a sudden people find their feet, they find their voice, and they do start coming back, and they actually, you know, because when a woman has an abortion, it doesn't take longer than when she has her next child and actually watches the growth and experiences the reality of that life forming within her to figure out she did not have that information when she made that first decision. And that is a time when it becomes really a really serious possibility that court cases against departments, etc., will be taking place. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'm sure what we'll do, we will take questions for clarity from what she has presented, in case members you do have. Honourable Gillian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to ask Honourable Dudley, if we look at the amendment of Section 3, and I'm so sorry, I don't have the Principal Act here with me, but it says that the following section is hereby substituted. Is it a substitution or is it an insertion? Because it's highlighted here, I don't know if anything has been substituted that will be removed. I just wanted to make clarity, to have clarity about that. And then secondly, I do believe that it is important for us to also look at the regulations. Because if I don't know, and people more clever than I as far as legislation is concerned can maybe just direct us as far as this is concerned, I'm not going to make out a case in favour or against the bill at this stage. In case of fire. I just wanted to ask that, that we perhaps just have access to the regulations, because I was just wondering, should one not look at the specific regulation and then rather consider, if it is in principle approved, that we look at, you know, the detail of this, which I feel has merit. Should we not perhaps look at this regulation and actually make it part of the principal act? Because I always feel that there's a problem with primary legislation, which is an act that goes through parliament and goes through scrutiny. And in the end, the devil is in the detail of a regulation. And regulations are often ignored. So what I'm arguing for is, should we not perhaps look at that as well? Because if the regulation makes provision for counselling, and it is a critical issue. You know, many women are not having the necessary access to information. And I think we should perhaps just look at that and say, what is the regulation say, and should that not also become part? Instead of referring in a principal act to a regulation, rather bring the regulation and make it part of the act. I was just wondering, could the legal advisor perhaps just give us some indication of how she would consider, before we go into the details? I think Honourable Dudley has made the necessary comments. Obviously, we also need to get the information from the Department of Health, also as far as cost implications are concerned, etc. But I think in principle, it is about giving people access to information before they make choices that can affect their lives. And ultimately, psychological development as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think prior to our determination, one thing sure that we'll look at all holistic approach towards this. Mm-hmm. For now, we'll just focus on, her giving clarity on the issues like the question you have raised earlier. Maybe Dindo, let me give her an opportunity to respond, then you'll come. Can you respond to the clarity-seeking question on the...
Yeah, sure. Good point. As far as I know, in terms of what I've done, it would be inserted and not substituted. So there is nothing taken out that I did consciously. And in terms of the regulations, I think the point there is that it's to ensure that the regulations relating to counselling under the Principal Act are complied with, so that the mother has all the information. Because what is happening, we've had these regulations for as long as possible, and because the legislation doesn't hold to a certain level of counselling or a certain depth of information, it allows those regulations to be read in a way that it pretty much is non-existent. In terms of the detail. So it's just what the part that's necessary, the detail could be spelled out in the regulations, but there has to be enough in the legislation so that it's not vague, so that it is clear, and so that there is a certain amount of information that is going to be necessary to make it informed. So that would be.
Honourable Dindo.
Thanks, Chair. Just a clarity from Honourable Dudley. Is this from a specific case, or are you just making a general insight? You're trying to insert this because of a general information that you have, or you have a specific case that where a person was not given the information before even making the choice for a termination?
Important point. There's several cases, and there's a lot going on the ground that medical practitioners are bringing to my attention. And there is one specific case that has, in fact, gone to the courts, and the Zenac Filet. Now, that one, in the end, probably now, because there's certain procedural things, the department's going to admit to procedural failure, and it'll kind of go away. But the fact is, it's still going to cost, but it's going to also, it still doesn't deal with the issue, and it still creates the vulnerability in terms of being able to be sued. So, yeah, there is one test case right now. I don't think it'll fully illuminate the dangers at the end of the day, but clearly I think we should see it as a warning, and that it is something, if we don't get the ensure that the legislation is not vague, we're going to make ourselves vulnerable on that score.
While advocate will be coming, I just wanted to check what relevance is this insertion that you are proposing relating to the previous submission that was considered by Parliament sometime?
In 2006, the private members bill there. Private members bill there was an issue of recognising the right to life of an unborn child. So that is a principled sort of understanding, and that would be an understanding from which the ACDP would come on any issue. And I think it is important that obviously we would recognise that you would have academics, you would have legal people, you would have people from the health sector who have a position, different positions, in terms of life. Now, obviously, clearly, science has brought it to, with all of the strides forward, there is no doubt the life that exists. So what used to be a kind of very wavery, dark area of when does life begin, now people are doing operations on that life. You're seeing it, you're seeing the heartbeats, you know, brain activity, etc. So those things are not in doubt anymore. So what we're also saying there is that there has been so much that's taken place scientifically that the kind of grey areas that existed at the time that the base bill was put in place are not there now. But that's a whole other argument, and that would relate to the right to life of the child. This clearly is a situation where there's an acceptance of the fact that there is this choice of termination of pregnancy bill, that there's clearly a loophole. And in fact, during the previous time when we were looking at amendments, there was a lot of submissions around the area of with concern that the counselling was the area of counselling was so vague that it kind of became almost optional. And it's not, so it's that concern that the public was putting across and stakeholders putting across at that time, coupled with the ongoing experiences of the medical profession in the meantime, that would necessitate this kind of approach.
Thanks, Jane. I just noted that you said that giving access to counsel which must comply with the regulation. Now, regulation is made by a minister, and I think you would need to re-look at this issue, because regulations can change, and a principal act can't refer to regulations. It should be the other way around, so you would need to reconsider that.
Can I speak to that? Just to say, yeah, I was aware of that obviously the regulations are made after the act normally. But I put it like that just simply to kind of put across the fact that there's no kind of non-recognition of the fact that there's a regulation. But the fact is that that regulation has shown itself to be useless at this point. So I just wanted to paint the picture. We know that the regulation should be the thing that's carrying this detail. But there needs to be something in the legislation that ensures that regulation will be able to be effective in the way that it needs to be. So, yeah, it would have to be reworded.
Then if I can suggest that you say that if the regulations are not complied with, there's a penalty or something like that, because you won't be able to proceed on the submission as it is. Honourable Killian.
Asking if it simply says which must comply with regulations. That's it.
What you may rule me out of order because we don't have a call. But it's just to assist. I just wanted to say, Comrade Dudley. I mean, Honourable Dudley. I was just wondering. That's why I was asking about the set of regulations. If one shouldn't go to the secondary legislation, the regulation, and actually pull something in from there to make it part of the primary act. So the reference to the regulation, if the regulation says people must be informed or they must have full access to information or they must understand, they must have a discussion and the risks must be explained, etc. I think I was only arguing that perhaps we should go and look at the regulation and bring it right into the primary act. And then the regulation could make provision. The regulation could then say, there must be a form signed by the mother, all documents put before her, all pictures, you know, of the unborn child. Did she see that? Check, 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 blah, 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 you know. Then in the regulations, it is it is what to be done in the act and the how to be done in the regulation. So I was just wondering, how do we proceed from here? Would it be better for Honourable Dudley to just go and revise the content of what she's proposing to us so that we can actually take the matter forward?
I think I just said earlier that we will, of course, unless she wanted to redo the submission. But for us to process the whole thing and then arrive at determination, we cannot leave any related documents that is talking to this. And we will also, when both ministry, both health and women and children, we will wanted to get their understanding in relate to what are the responsibility of, you know, whoever is conducting and what are the, you know, the right of the person who is supposed to be given this particular treatment. So they will then, you know, give us a clear picture whether indeed there is a need to amend any part of, you know, the principal legislation or the regulations themselves. Honourable Douglas.
Look, I get the point about the regulations, so that would have to come out completely, and if it was necessary in there at all, it would need to go in as some kind of penalty or whatever. But that was really there for me to have an opportunity to acknowledge that there are regulations, but in my reading of the regulations, the things that I've put here that I believe from the medical fraternity are specifically important are not in here. Or if someone reads them in here, they're not it can be read by somebody and not by somebody else. It's just not there, and there's nothing in the act that's holding the regulations to putting them in there. So it's just, you know, simply the way that I'm reading it is that unless it's specified, it's not going to necessarily translate into regulations. So I'd like the rest of it left there.
Further clarity seeking? Nothing. Thank you, Honourable Dudley. We will then take the particular proposal forward with the stakeholders, which I'm sure you'll be able to see. If you so wish, you may attend to hear what their submissions are in the day allocated to them. But we will then, upon our determination, also given you some acknowledgement and indication of what we are submitting to the Parliament as a person who sponsored the whole thing. So thank you very much for coming. And thank you very much. You are welcome. Honourable members, I'm sure that's where we are. We will then pack the submissions and wait for other stakeholders to do the submissions at the date that will be advised. I'm just having a concern This is our third consecutive meetings where we don't form a quorum. I'm not sure whether the authority of this institution are able to trace down what is happening in the structures of the parliament. I would imagine if they are able to, they can't fold arms if we are saying this is the third consecutive meeting that we don't correct. I would believe they will do something. I've been informed that nearly all members have been given, apologies on basis of other commitments, except the Inkatha Freedom Party delegate. As usual, they haven't said anything. I'm sure one area that we may not leave here without talking to it is Honorable Dreher, whom happened to lose a brother in something that occurred in Tripoli or around there. Together with the secretariat, when we were preparing for this meeting, we have decided to organize something like a card that we'll send for her to send our condolences and sympathy for what happened. I'm sure you will be requested also to append your signatures there on behalf of committee. This concern of non-attendance of members, that causing us not to continue with the business of the committee. It's even getting worse because as I'm sitting here now, we have got either three new submissions that we haven't even, tabled them. Now you start asking yourself, are we going to do justice to members of parliament or the people of South Africa? Because when people submit their proposal or their petitions, special petitions to parliament, they expect, an action that should then be taken upon the submissions. But we can't do anything if we don't have a quorum, because I can't sit and say that I presume, then Speaker, this is the position. We need to, comply with the rules of National Assembly that we should have a quorum. At least in this regard, our quorum is no longer even six. It means seven, because we had Honorable Pretorius, who is not an alternate, but a member, full-fledged member, which then increased the number of quorum to seven. So I'm not sure. Maybe you may advise honourable members in this setup where we are sitting in as to what do you think we need to do, Honourable Kellyan.
Honourable Chair, I think what we must realise is it has been a very hectic term with the budget votes. All of us were pulled into additional meetings, presentations, etc. And although, personally, in, for instance, the Communication Committee, it's a small budget, but we've got so many state entities that are reporting and that must present their budget. So it's been a very hectic period. So I don't want you to lose heart. I think we must ascribe that. Probably to the hectic program of Parliament during budget time. I'm convinced that in the new term it will be easier for us to call right and that members would be able to attend. If we do feel that the scheduled date of a Friday is really making it extremely difficult because all of our members have constituency work or whatever, then we should perhaps consider, if we, in the new term, we should perhaps consider to go back to the chair of committee and just consult and say, is there not a slot, for instance, 11 o'clock on a Tuesday meeting, on a Tuesday or on a Wednesday or what, so that we almost take a mid-morning slot for this committee so that we can just start making progress with our backlog of work. So that would be my suggestion.
Honourable Tinsley.
Chair, I fully agree with the previous speaker, but you know, Chair, my understanding, Friday is a working day for us in Parliament, but I know that Fridays are always difficult for members to make. Either they come to meetings, and meetings must be held in a very hurrying situation, or either they don't come. I've got another committee that says that meets on Fridays, also did not meet. But for this committee, Chair, I think we did mention before that this committee is not taken seriously by Parliament. I'm not sure or whether I'm putting it correctly. But this committee does not have a slot during the week. The other committees all have slots, but Friday, we thought Friday would be the right day for us to meet as this committee. But I think Parliament also needs to be informed. The Secretariat needs to be informed. The other committees that I did not go to had a slot on Wednesday. So it has two slots in a week, which is unfair for committees that don't have a slot at all. I think something needs to be corrected with the Secretary or the Program Committee, Chair. I think you can still pursue it.
Thank you for the advice. Well, we will continue to find a better way of addressing the challenges confronted the committee. It is just, you know, a worrying factor that one should indicate to you that I'm getting frustrated. You know, when you had a plan and a plan doesn't move, you really can't take things for granted. You always wanted some kind of an intervention by the authority. Nonetheless, together with the Secretariat, we have agreed that by next week we should be able to submit developments in relate to possible amendment of the rules. Even if Mukesh might have not been prepared anything, would then just, you know, draft and then highlight areas that we feel that squishing our work, that making us unable to operate to the attention of the speaker, whom we believe upon the recipient will then refer them to a subcommittee of the Rules Committee to look into it, and I'm sure they would then bring you now on a run to say, can you prepare something for this matter? Thank you. Nothing we can do. We will take this concern up with the authority and see whether we cannot find a solution. If it means to change the day, let it be. If it means to whip the members to attend, let it be. We will see. We'll see what is, you know, possible within the people who are responsible for the work. Thank you, and until we meet again next week, Friday.
Thank you. Anywhere you go.
Thank you. Yeah, I know it will.
Come back this
way. Okay.
Thank you.